Now, let us look into this just a little more closely, a little more deeply. Let's try to place ourselves imaginatively in the position of those early followers of the Buddha, that is to say, those who were unable to identify Buddhism exclusively with the verbal teaching. And in case some of you may be thinking that we've wandered rather far from our subject, let me observe at once that we are very close now to the origin of the Bodhisattva ideal. The Buddha died. The Buddha passed away. And by all accounts, the disciples were grief-stricken. Not quite all of them. The arahants, we are told, those who had reached emancipation, those who were enlightened for themselves, who had gone beyond all passions, all sorrows, they were not affected. They were not moved. But everybody else, we are told, was struck almost dumb with grief. According to tradition, even the animals were affected. And the very beautiful traditional representations in Buddhist art of this very solemn final scene of the Buddha's passing away. They're mainly Chinese in origin, and they usually show a scene in the forest. It's rather interesting, it's rather significant, incidentally, that the Buddha was born in the midst of trees. And he gained enlightenment sitting underneath a tree. And he also died in the midst of trees. And the scene which these scriptures conjure up for us, the scene which is depicted by these ancient Buddhist artists, is of a grove of sal trees. Sal trees are very, very beautiful. I've often seen them in India. They're perfectly straight. They're just one straight, slender stem. They're not quite even a foot in diameter. They're very, very straight, and they grow up to a height of about 20, 30 feet. They have broad green leaves, beautiful white flowers. So we're told that the Buddha passed away lying on a stone couch at the foot of a cluster, a group, of these sal trees. And these representations show the disciples, the monk disciples, kings, princes, merchants, wandering mendicants, Brahmins, traders, flower sellers, in attitudes of grief, grouped around him. And a little further away, the different animals of the forest, domesticated animals, and all of them weeping, as if to say the whole world shared a common grief in the loss of the Buddha. And there's a little sort of folklore incident here which says that amongst all the animals, there's only one animal which didn't weep, and that was the cat. And that's why the cat in Buddhism, I'm afraid, has a rather bad reputation. And there was a rule which said bodhisattvas are not supposed to keep cats, as cats are supposed to be devoid of compassion, of feeling. Because even on the occasion of the Buddha's passing away, the cat just went on, presumably, licking her paws and didn't take very much notice. But however great their grief might have been, however great their grief undoubtedly was, even though they felt in the words of the scriptures that the light of the world had gone out, still slowly the disciples recovered, as we all have to recover on these occasions from their grief. And they started taking stock of the situation. The Buddha was gone. At first they couldn't believe it, that the Buddha was no longer there. The master was no longer there. The teacher was no longer there. But eventually they had to settle down to life without the Buddha. Life in a Buddha-less world, as it were. Which, especially for those who had lived in his presence, in his shadow, as it were, for many, many years, was a terrible change. But eventually they settled down and they started taking stock of the situation. And they started trying to understand, well, what was it with which they were left? What did they have left now that the Buddha had gone? And some said, well, we've got the teaching. The teaching that the Buddha has given us, the doctrines, the Eightfold Path, seven stages of purification, the five skandhas, we've got the rules of behavior, the 10 rules, the 150 rules, and so on. We've got those. And some of them were quite satisfied, or more or less satisfied, after the parinirvana of the Buddha, to be left with the rules, to be left with the doctrines, the teachings. They felt that they got it, as it were, all there. They perhaps were the more intellectual ones. They perhaps were those who were quite happy analysing and classifying the teaching, the tradition which later became what we know as the Abhidharma. But there were some, in fact there were many among the disciples of the Buddha who were not satisfied with that. Yes, they had the teaching, they had the four truths, the eightfold path, they had the five skandhas and all the rest of the teaching, they had the rules. They had nothing against the teaching, nothing against the rules, but they weren't satisfied. They felt that there was something missing from their lives, now that the Buddha himself had gone. They couldn't help remembering the Buddha. They couldn't help thinking of the Buddha, even when they were supposed to be thinking of the teaching, committing those long lists of terms to memory. They couldn't help thinking of the Buddha. They couldn't help remembering him, couldn't help thinking of his qualities. And they couldn't help, so far as we can see, recalling various incidents in his life, incidents with which many of them must have been personally acquainted, incidents which exemplified his personal qualities. For instance, some of them no doubt remembered the occasion, the very well-known occasion, when the Buddha was going round from one little hermitage to the next, and he found in one little hut an elderly monk just lying on the floor, in a terrible condition, evidently been there for days and days, without any attention, any help. And he asked Ananda, who was going around with him, well, what is this? What has happened? And Ananda said, he's an elderly monk. He hasn't got a very good temper. He's not very popular with the other monks. So they've neglected him. And he's lying here in his own filth, without anyone to care for him. So the Buddha sent Ananda for water, and the water was heated, and we're told that the Buddha took the head and Ananda took the feet. They lifted him onto a bed, they washed him, they made him comfortable, and then the Buddha, we're told, called all the monks together, and he said that, monks, you have neither father nor mother nor brother nor sister, you've given up the world, you must be brother and sister, you must be mother and father to one another. And then he said, he who wishes to serve me, let him serve the sick. So incidents like this, incidents which showed the Buddha's practical compassion, surely it must have remained in the memories, in the minds, in the hearts of many of the disciples after his passing away.